Right. Thank you very much, honourable members. We're going to continue with our last item of the day. It's the third and fourth quarterly financial and non-financial performance report. Welcome to the Executive Director of IPET, Mr. Robert McBride and his team. Honourable members, give an opportunity for yourselves to introduce yourself. We'll start on that side.
Hi, it's Diane Kohler Barnard here.
Yeah, I think the other members will join us maybe after the smoke break. Let us then give the Executive Director an opportunity to introduce his team. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. If it's in order, I'll ask them to go quickly if they introduce themselves from the left-hand side. Thanks.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Moses Lamini. I'm the national spokesman for IPET.
Morning, honorable members. I'm Anne Roswell. I'm the chief director of legal services in IPET.
Morning, honorable members. I'm Mamadisha Mabope, chief director of compliance monitoring and stakeholder management. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable chairperson and the honorable members. My name is Susan Letlape, acting Director of Strategy and Performance Monitoring. Thank you.
Morning, honourable members and chairperson. My name is Antoinette Mpaho. I'm the Director of Executive Support. Thank you.
Good morning, honourable chairperson and honourable members. My name is Nomkhosi Netsiyana. I'm the Chief Director of Corporate Services at IPET.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Victor Senna, the CFO.
Good morning, honourable chairperson, honourable members. My name is Michael Sissoko. I'm the National Head of Investigations. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's go straight to the presentation. Mr. McBride, you're welcome.
Thanks, honourable chairperson. I will deal with the overview, and then I'll hand over to the CFO, and then acting director for strategy and performance, and then we will go with the programs from program 1 to program 4. So in terms of the overview from my side, with a total workload of 9,451, that is backlog and new cases, and I'm sorry, Honourable Chairperson, there's an echo coming through here. I'm not sure from where.
Maybe swap.
Just try that once. We're finding some of them don't do it.
Okay. Thanks, ma'am.
That's it.
Yeah. And we achieved that, which is unprecedentedly high workload to deal with the same number of personnel, limited resources, and the same ICT infrastructure. So underfunding has a significant impact on performance, but we've done our best with very little. Management interventions were implemented to improve performance within constrained resources. Most of our performance targets in Program 2, our core function, have been achieved, except for debts in police custody, where we are dependent on other agencies and processes to complete what we are doing. So overall, our expenditure is at 99%, which the CFO will go into greater detail on. In our engagements with the Auditor General, it appears that we will have an unqualified audit. It's also when we had major successes with Program 2. One key element of the strategy in the core mandate of going for high-value investigations on systemic corruption is that we've noticed another trend. We're not sure at this stage whether there is a nexus between focusing on the high value systemic corruption, but we've noticed a drop in incidents reported or incidents dealt with of normal corruption. Our suspicion is, and maybe with the next few years we'll see, is that the focus on corruption has removed the mantle of impunity, and there is a perceptible detection of change in attitude of police officers. Based, of course, there are other variables, but based on the fact that reports and instances of corruption have reduced. So we think we're on the right track by focusing on IVM. We've also now had cases going to court. However, that has come at a cost. We've had harassment from our suspects. We've had resistance, counter-investigations, attempts to penetrate IPED. Some of them have been successful, but not as successful as they would have liked it to be. Many of these issues are subject of litigation. For example, our search warrants on FDA boss Kit Keating has been challenged, will be heard on 18th of June in the High Court. And the counter investigations, which has now become, it's a constitutional issue, will be heard in the High Court on 20th and 21st of June. That is the counter investigations by Patlani and the Northwest team headed by Mabula. They have not stopped the county investigation, even though there's a court order and a judgment to the effect that they shouldn't get involved with the county investigation, and they can only continue with the investigation with the express direction of the National Director of Public Prosecutions, which they don't have. But they've continued. Elements of crime intelligence and the Mabula Northwest team have been involved in undermining our investigations. Now, honourable members, if honourable members will remember, in during February, April and May, at various committees of Parliament, SCOPA twice and the PCP in April, this issue was raised of our officials being approached to scup an investigation and to make allegations against my senior management. But my senior management will deal with that later, and I'm sure you'll have questions to ask on that later. But it's come at a cost. It's very similar to what happened with rendition, when the investigations did not go the way some people wanted it to go. We all became victims, with thumbsuck allegations pulled out of the sky. We were victorious, but after a lot of trauma for myself and my senior management. So generally, there's a marked improvement. It's up on our performance on all aspects, and I'll give some details just now, which is very different to the performance of 15-16. Which was basically portrayed and purported to be excellent performance, but they were jibbering on special closure of cases. Yeah, our performance is a verified performance. Mr. Sissoko will speak more about it, but it's also the reassessing better standard operating procedures, better supervision has resulted in us being able to do this. We've had 73 criminal convictions in this period, 202 departmental findings, and a total referrals of 1,800, just over 1,800. But here's an important point which needs to be made. Out of that 1,800, only 700 were negative. That it means that most of the police officers who there were complaints against, who were under investigation, were actually cleared. So it's about two-thirds were actually cleared. It's very important to note that, because when we have negative recommendations and there are disciplinaries that take place, the perception is easily created at rank and file that there's no space for redemption. However, our figures show that we don't only deal with negative issues. Where people have have been cleared, we say so, and we do it as speedily as possible. And I think that's important to note. So, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, I would just suggest that we move to the CFO now and deal with the figures of the finance and expenditure.
Thank you, Executive Director. CFO, you're welcome.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Before I go into the third quarter and the fourth quarter expenditure, I just want to emphasize 2 points, Chairperson. The first one being, what is that we are doing to address the qualification that we got to the previous financial year? And secondly, just to talk to the issue of the underfunding that we emphasized during the last presentation to the committee. Chairperson, during the last presentation, we emphasized 2 points. The first point was to say IPED is at the forefront of fighting corruption. And we made our argument to say it's quite important that you properly fund IPED. But also it places an obligation on us to say, you know, our finances, we need to lead by example when it comes to the audit outcome by the Auditor General. So if you look at the history of IPED, we've been achieving unqualified audit throughout. It was only in 2016-17 where we were qualified based on the accruals. And when we investigated to say what was the cause of the qualification, we found out that it was mainly in terms of the controls for recording of accruals. So to address the qualification, we worked very hard. Firstly, we put the process in place to identify the accruals, and secondly, we said let's put the necessary controls to make sure that such finding doesn't occur again in the future. And again, we are working very closely with the Auditor General, because one of the things that we wanted was before the audit, we should be on the same page with the AG to say the 2016-17 accruals has been addressed. So they are satisfied with what we've done for 2016-17. And we are also confident that based on the amount of work that we've done, the 2017-18 also accruals will be addressed. And then secondly, we've developed a three-year plan in terms of achieving clean auditors IPED. We said first year we want to achieve unqualified. Second year we want to reduce the number of findings. And then third year then we can achieve the clean audit when it comes to our finances. So we are in the process of drafting a formal plan in terms of the clean audit strategy, and hopefully we can share it with the committee in the next meeting. And then the second issue, Chairperson, is the issue of the underfunding. During the last meeting, we emphasized the point that, you know, this financial year, for us to be able to sustain our operation, we will need a minimum of 20 million. So if you look at our accruals over the years, you'll notice that it's in the region of 20 to 25 million, which demonstrates that, you know, our current operations are underfunded by the similar amount. And if you look at the 2017-18 accruals, they are currently sitting at 19 million. Again, you know, demonstrating that we need a minimum of 20 million for us to be able to sustain the current operation. But also from our side, we implemented measures to say internally what is that we can do, take into account the financial situation that the department is experiencing. And firstly, we said we need to continuously reprioritize the funds so that we can align the funding towards our core function, which is the investigation. And it's not ideal, but some of the satellite offices were also closed, you know, taking into account the financial pressures that we are facing. And again, I'm saying it's not ideal, but we are forced as IP to be able to do that. And the other thing that we've done internally is that we've got the Budget Control Committee, which scrutinizes expenditure on a monthly basis, so that we are able to say this is where we need to reprioritize and this is where we need to cut expenditure. So we believe these measures that we've implemented, Chairperson, they are aimed at reducing expenditure, you know, and also making sure that we are efficient as IPED going forward. And also the point that I want to emphasize, Chairperson, is that the cost of our accruals is not that we've increased our expenditure. It's mainly because we are underfunded in terms of our contractual obligation. You know, the example that I can give you is in terms of the leases that we have for our buildings. We require 20.5 million annually just to service the current leases. And the money that we get from Public Works in terms of devolution is around 17.5, which means already the shortfall needs to be covered from our budget. So it's a trend when you look at all our contractual obligations that there is that shortfall that needs to come from our operating budget. So those are the points I wanted to emphasize, Chairperson, before I come into the expenditure for the third quarter. So when you look at the, I can't see there, but I will look at my notes here. When you look at the expenditure for the third quarter per program, the trend is that by the end of the third quarter, you should be at 75% in terms of your expenditure. So program one was sitting at 76.9, which was slightly above the norm. Program two, it was sitting at 79.3, which is also above the norm of 75%. It was only program three that was slightly below the norm of 75%. It was sitting at 66.39. And mainly there, the underspending was mainly on their compensation of employees that was causing them to underspend. And if you look at the table below that one, it gives the expenditure per economic classification. At the end of the third quarter, our overall expenditure was sitting at 77.91%. So it was 2.9% above the norm. And the main cause of that, Chairperson, it was mainly that we are setting in prior year accruals, which is the recalculated figure is now sitting at 25 million, which means that was the first charge against the budget of 2017-18. And then the next page or the next slide, it talks to the economic classification. I've already spoken to that, that our overall expenditure was sitting at 77.91 at the end of the third quarter. And then if you look at the fourth quarter or the final expenditure, the final year expenditure, Chairperson, you'll notice that all our programs were at 100%. So I think overall we managed to spend 100% for all the programs. And what is important is that we didn't overspend in any of the programs because it could have constituted an authorized expenditure. And also we didn't overspend on our compensation of employees. The only thing, Chairperson, is that we overspend on goods and services by 6 million. Mainly, again, I need to emphasize it was because we are paying the prior year accruals. And then overall, our expenditure at year end, it was sitting at 99.9, which means there was 146.8 thousand that was left, which will be surrendered to the National Revenue Fund. And some of our cost drivers for 2017-18 was mainly on your operating leases, which is mainly your G fleet or the vehicles that your fleet, we are renting from G fleet. And secondly, it was your fleet services, which talks to the maintenance and fuel of the fleet that we are owning as IPET. And the third one, it was mainly on your property payments, which is the leases for the building, which I've already shared in my introduction. So overall, goods and services were sitting at 108%, so which means we've overspent by 8% on goods and services. And then compensation of employees, it was sitting at 96%. It was mainly because of the delays that we experienced internally for filling of some of the critical posts like your provincial managers or your provincial heads. And then in conclusion, Chairperson, I just also want to emphasize that we ended the year with accruals of 19 million. And again, the shortfall was mainly on your contractual obligation, which are the invoices that we are not able to pay at year end. And also, if you look at the trend, the accruals are likely to continue over the MTF unless, Chairperson, we get the funding that we requested, you know, the minimum of 20 million. For us to not be able to control. So the trend that we are seeing is that we are going to have accruals of between 20 and 25 for the next 3 years, unless something drastic happens internally to be able to prevent that. And also, the point that I want to emphasize is the issue of the contractual obligation. I think I've spoken to this when I was talking to my introduction. And lastly, what we are doing internally is that we'll continue to engage with relevant stakeholders you know, to try and get the necessary support for us to receive those additional funding, so that at least we are able to sustain our current operation, Chairperson. So that is the presentation on expenditure.
Thank you, CFO.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. Could I hand over to Mem Letlape, please?
Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. On this slide, I'll be talking to the summary of our performance per program. The first program is administration, which is our program one. And for quarter three, when we look into all our targets, that is our strategic targets and the program performance information targets, we have a total of five targets that we are supposed to achieve during the period under review, and we managed to complete or to achieve only four targets in quarter three. And also in quarter four, the performance remained constant with four targets that were achieved against the total of five, which translates to 80% performance for program one. And the target that was not achieved is the target on the implementation of our internal audit annual plan. And for the next program, which is our core, program two, investigations and information management, for quarter three, our performance was sitting at 24% with only four targets that were achieved against a total of 17. And in quarter four, based on the management interventions that were implemented, where management prioritized specific targets that we wanted to ensure that by the end of the financial year they are achieved, particularly those that were prioritized from the beginning of the financial year, which are our death matters, the two death matters, and also the two rape matters and our corruption indicators. And out of the five prioritized indicators, we managed to improve the performance on four of them. And the only one that was not achieved is the target on the on death as a result of police action. So by the end of quarter four, we managed to achieve an additional five targets, which brought the total of targets achieved to nine and translating to 53% achievement of our targets under Program 2, which is a very significant improvement in our performance for Program 2. You remember in the previous financial year, the performance for this program was sitting at 17%. So there is a significant improvement, and the interventions that were implemented, they yielded positive results. And given the status of our resources, management had to ensure that we prioritize which cases we can focus on so that we can improve our performance. And for Program 3, which is legal services, our performance remained constant throughout the two quarters at 50% with four targets achieved.
Yes, thank you, Honourable Maki. Yes, sir.
I think it would be best if, when explaining this thing, maybe the reasons be given, so that we mustn't ask the questions after. This to 70.
Yeah, maybe they will deal with the individual programs, I presume. This is just a summary. Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you, Honourable Martin.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I was saying for Program 3, the performance is was at 50% for both quarters with four targets achieved out of the total of eight. And for Program 4, compliance, monitoring, and stakeholder management, the performance is 100%. Throughout the two quarters, all the four targets were achieved. When we look into the overall performance of the department for quarter three, we were sitting at 47% with 16 targets achieved out of a total of 34 targets. And for quarter four, based on the improvement that we realized under program two, our overall performance moved to 62% with 21 targets achieved out of the total of 34 targets. I will then hand over to the program managers to provide the detailed performance per indicator. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. The performance for Program 1 in terms of quarter 3 and quarter 4, it came to 80%. I will go through individual targets. First target is the number of strategic training areas undertaken as per IP's training plan. This target was exceeded by 5. So it was achieved and exceeded. So we have listed the number, the types of training interventions or programs that were provided for our investigators as well as the rest of our employees. Percentage of vacancy rate maintained below 10%. For both quarters, we were at 7%. The target was achieved. Percentage of implementation of annual internal audit plan. During quarter three, the audits that were conducted were 9 out of the planned 19. The reason why the internal audit could not achieve on this one was because of the timing of the provincial audit reviews and as well as other audits that were supposed to be undertaken. They affected the head office audit. The same thing happened on during quarter four, where 14 audits were completed instead of 19 audits that were supposed to be implemented. Another issue here that is not highlighted that caused underperformance on quarter four for audits was because of at the end of the financial year we had taken a strategic decision as the department that we would not continue with traveling and so on. So audit, as we know, that it involves traveling to different provinces and so on. So in light of the budget constraints, we had taken that we would pause on the traveling so that we do not incur unauthorized expenditure as the department. So that's another reason that caused underperformance in internal audit specifically because it involves a lot of traveling. That is over and above the ad hoc audits that were requested to be performed where management would identify risk areas that need to be checked and be provided with assurance that everything was under control and in line with good governance practices. Number of reports on risk maturity level produced. The target was met for all the quarters. And number of performance reports on implementation of APP submitted to National Treasury and DPME within the stipulated period. That particular target was achieved. So as I indicated earlier on, we achieved the 80% performance. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nitsiona.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. For Program 2, as Mr. Tlape had indicated, there's a marked improvement in terms of performance. When we look at the performance for the last financial year, which was only 17% of the total targets for the program, we have made a significant improvement. We are now sitting at 59%. But importantly is to indicate to the committee that we implemented a lot of interventions to make sure that we achieve this performance in terms of firstly strengthening our policy environment in terms of our standard operating procedures to ensure that the investigations happen in line with the standard operating procedure and we do quality investigation. But also this performance happened against the background of a situation where we had to conduct investigation on Marikana, which was funded, and we had to take resources from our baseline budget to do this investigation. It also happens against the background of a lot of these high-profile investigations in relation to high-profile corruption cases that we're investigating, where we also had to redirect resources to deal with this investigation. And be that as it may, we're able to try and achieve this performance that we've done. Of the two strategic indicators, we only achieved one, the one in relation to the training. Our target was 75, we done 100 on that, and we exceeded that target, and the training that we did was investigation and management of cyber and electronic crimes, training, as well as forensic investigation. On the decision-ready cases, we did not meet the target of 60%, we did 40%. That was also affected by the fact that, as we've indicated, that we prioritize our cases. And if honourable members will realize, as I talk to the this presentation later, that the number of cases in relation to assaults, for instance, is a high number of cases. So when you look at that percentage-wise, it therefore affects also the percentage on the strategic target, because strategic target includes all of our cases. With regard to program performance indicators, on a percentage of cases registered within 72 hours, registered and allocated within 72 hours, we're able to achieve 79% at the fourth quarter, and we achieved the target. The number of statistical reports on investigation generated, we're able to achieve all six reports. Percentage of investigation of death in custody, we're able to achieve 72% of the 62% target. However, on the investigation of death as a result of police action, we're not able to achieve that target, as indicated that issues of budget constraints, delays in obtaining technical reports, and reprioritization also impacted there. Percentage of investigation of rape, we're able to achieve also the target there at 65%. Percentage of investigation of rape while in police custody, we're able to achieve the target there at 100%. Percentage of investigation of torture, as indicated there, we did not achieve the target. We did only 19% of 45%. And percentage of assault, as indicated, you realize that it's a huge number of cases there that we receive on torture, and because of reprioritization, these are the cases that were not part of the prioritized cases, and you realize that we only managed 31% of those cases, and that also had a lot of impact on our strategic target. Percentage of investigation of corruption, we achieved our target there at 45%. Percentage of investigation of other criminal matters, we also did not achieve our target there. We did 24% instead of 51%. And the target on systemic corruption, we achieved the target there, 5 out of 2, which was the target. Percentage of backlog cases, we also did not achieve our target there. It's quite also a substantial number of cases. We only did 34% instead of 50%, which is our target. And percentage of dockets referred to National Prosecution Authority within 30 days of sign-off, we did 92% when our target is 90%, so we exceeded our target there. And then percentage of disciplinary recommendation referred to the SAPS or municipal police, we did 94% there at a target of 90%. We included a slide on criminal convictions that we had as a department, 98 criminal convictions. We list all of them. You'll see that the sentence range from 22 years to fines and so forth. I will never go through each and individual slide on those sentences. And then you'll see on slide 36 the departmental convictions there. We achieved 234 departmental convictions with 36 dismissals, 10 suspensions without salary, 10 corrective counseling, 13 fined, 4 reprimanded, 39 verbal warning, 25 written warning, 25 final written warning, 93 written warning, and 4 suspended sentences. And then we, on slide 37, we show the disciplinary referrals that we did to the recommendations that we did to the SAPS, the negative ones, is 734 of them. And then on slide 38, we show how these matters were dealt with, 187 being initiated. And then the ones on the guilty ones, we indicate the different termination of service, 14, suspension 6, written warning 57, fined 1, counseling 4, verbal warning 12, and then the not guilty one is 85, withdrawn 10, and then the ones that were still outstanding is 358. And then we also show the positive recommendations that we did, which is 1,089. So out of all the cases, the recommendation that we sent to the SAPS, it's 1,823, of which 734 were negative recommendations. That is where now we recommend that they discipline the members. And then 1,089 is positive recommendation, where we say the members did not commit any misconduct. The next slide talks to what I've already alluded to earlier. And then the next slide talks specifically to MPS matters that we dealt with, where we've made recommendations. You note that we did 9 negative recommendations and 5 positive recommendations. So in total, there were 14 recommendations in respect of MPS. And then with regard to MPA, we did 1,428 referrals to the MPA. And then the next slide, on slide 43, we indicate that we are waiting response on 1,029 of them. And the 51, there was a decision to prosecute, 297 declined to prosecute, and then 39, there were queries that have been dealt with, 4 inquests, 8 withdrawals. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Sissoko. Executive Director.
Honorable Chairperson, I will be presenting a performance for legal services. In terms of the strategic indicator for legal services, the percentage of legal advice provided to investigator from the total request that is received, the annual target is 90%. And in both quarter 3 and quarter 4, the target was exceeded by 10%. There's an error that's been made there in quarter 3 where it states that it's 6 out of 7. It is actually 6 out of 6. In terms of the program performance indicators, I'd just like to reiterate to the committee that what should be taken note of is the fact that on the structure, legal services is supposed to have 5 legal officials working within legal services. At the during the course of the performance that we're reporting on here, we were operating as 3 legal officials in legal services, including myself. That has an adverse effect on the performance of the program, due to the fact that a lot of the work is very labor intense. In terms of the performance there, the percentage of written legal opinions that is provided to the department within 21 working days of request. We did not achieve the target there. The performance of contracts that were finalized within 30 working days of request, that was also not achieved. The percentage of civil and labor litigation matters that are processed was also not achieved. The committee should also take into consideration the fact that going forward, we've decided to reduce the program, the targets that we're going to utilize, because we're taking into consideration the staff that we have in legal services. In terms of the performance of arbitration dispute matters attended to within the regulated time frame, there we have achieved the targets there. The percentage of oral legal advice provided to investigators within 24 hours of request, here the annual target is 90%, and we achieved 100%, which means that the target was exceeded. In terms of the percentage of written legal advice provided to investigators within 48 hours, this target was also exceeded, because the annual target is 90%, and we achieved 100%. In terms of the percentage of PIA requests that are finalized within 30 days, the target there is 100%, and during quarter 3 and quarter 4, we were unable to reach the target. It was 90% and 95% and 96% respectively. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chairperson, honorable members, for program 4, we had one strategic indicator, percentage implementation of integrated communication and stakeholder engagement strategy. This target was exceeded in both quarter 3 and quarter 4. When coming to our program performance indicators, we had three. Number one, the number of community outreach events conducted per year. It was also exceeded in quarter 3 and quarter 4. The next one, engagements at national level. The target was also exceeded in both quarters 3 and 4. The last one, formal engagements at provincial level. This target was also exceeded in both quarters. So for program 4, all our targets were achieved. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I hand over to the executive director to conclude.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. I think perhaps we should take questions so that we don't forget key elements.
So that's the presentation. Thank you, Executive Director. Members, we will go to questions. The first three from my side, and then we'll follow the schedule. Yeah, I think it's good to hear that there's possibly an unqualified audit in the offing. It's good news. It shows improvement. And I think also with regard to the 20 million, of course, the Portfolio Committee recommended that. So Treasury must come back to us on that issue. It's quite critical that IPET's got the national necessary financial performance to deal with issues. I just want to, the first issue relates to the current high-profile South African Police Service cases. If we can just get an indication, how many of the investigations is at Deputy National Commissioner level, Divisional Commissioner level, and Provincial Commissioner level, that we can just get an indication, because I saw the National Commissioner indicated earlier than this week that there was two suspensions of two Lieutenant Generals. I don't know if it's linked to IPET cases. If we can just get the status report, what is the general picture? Then a concerning issue that the ED has raised is the issue of the county investigations. Because in effect it means you've got scarce resources, now you must use that scarce resources to go to court. Now, I think in the previous interaction, ED, we asked whether you have raised the matter with the executive authority, the Minister of Police. Because we said also at that stage, if the situation doesn't improve, we will have a joint meeting. So if the executive director can just indicate to us, was it raised with the Minister of Police? What was the feedback? Because actually, you're going to use now scarce resources to litigate against SAPS, in effect. That is the bottom line. And I mean, it's going to be hundreds of thousands or millions of rand. So if we can just get an indication. Can't it be solved in terms of management? The third issue is also an issue we ask for all government departments, just to get an update in terms of your top management, your provincial managers, lifestyle audits. The president highlighted the issue in his State of the Nation address. So what is the status? I presume everybody is vetted, but is lifestyle audits currently part of your core business? What's the status? Say if you've got 20 SMS members, how many lifestyle audits have you done this year? If we can just get a clear indication. Let's go to Honorable Molobatsky.
Thank you, Chairperson. Tell us about the unauthorized expenditure recorded at the end of 2017/18 financial year. My next one, the growth in accruals in IPID was central concern of the Treasury. How are you addressing this? My third one, to the CFO, you made mention of in your presentation of a 19 million. And when you mentioned a 17 million, when we have 19 in the presentation, which? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Mulabacha. Honorable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson. In slide 20, on your comments of percentage of investigations discharge of an official firearm by a police officer that are decision rate, it says delays with obtaining technical report. Who's delaying you? In slide 20, 21 and 49, targets are so low and you didn't achieve it. It's 45% the target of percentage of investigation of torture data decision rate. Why the targets are so low? Why can't you put 50% instead of 45 or 19? Is it 19 in 49? Let me check 49. It's 25. You can't tell us that you have achieved 25% out of 100%. My third question, ED, what do you mean about counter-investigations? You said Pahlane and Mabula, they are doing counter-investigation. Why can't we, and you said to us that those cases are in court. Why can't we give the court a space and let the court to decide if there are cases or not? Chairperson, my fourth question. It is not for us to decide here about the things that happened in the media. My suggestion is that we must call all the parties involved to present their cases so that we can stop gossip. Let's have a full day to deal with all things that are in the media, Chairperson. Because now the other party is saying this and the other party is saying this. Each and every day we have news on the media. And we don't know as a portfolio committee. Why can't we call all the parties involved if we have a full day, to discuss all those things so that we can stop all these things? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mula. Honorable Abidja.
I should think we are having a problem as indicated here. But I should think this thing, we must work on it in a way that all these allegations being said, we are told this, that, and that, we get issues in the media, it's not come to an end. So, therefore, we need to have an effective strategic plan to deal with all those once and for all, to avoid being a cozy committee.
Thank you, Honourable Mabija. Honourable Marke.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just one question from my side. On slide 20, says percentage of deaths as a result of police action that are decision ready. Targets not achieved due to reprioritization of cases due in terms of impact. That also applies to slide number 22. I was just trying to think of myself, or if there's debts involved, or rather, what does the reprioritization of cases due to impact? How do you reprioritize in terms of the death? What impact are we talking about if somebody died? Just trying to understand. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Markey. Honorable Kala Barnard.
They're all correct.
Say, Mike.
Doesn't like me. Okay, I found this one. Thank you. Okay, I think we're winning. Look, it's all about the finances. I know you said it looks like you'll have an unqualified, perfectly good audit, but you have this albatross, and I just don't know how to get around it. Year after year, we're hearing about these accumulated accruals. They're growing at a rate above inflation. Now, the Treasury did warn you about them, but it's all very well and good to warn you, but what solution did they provide, if any? And what have you done proactively to get out of them? What is the situation there? I mean, the SAT apparently have reprioritized 50 million to deal with the accruals. And has that arrived? Is it going to be used to finally clear the slate? What is the status there? And was there any unauthorized expenditure? And if so, how much? Your problem is you have this huge goods and services expenditure, but actually you can't pay the bills, and you might find that's recategorized as unauthorized expenditure because you're in this terrible situation with this historical debt that's hanging around your neck. I mean, in fact, a year ago, the AG was actually questioning whether you could go on as a going concern, as you recall. So to tell us now that in a year you've got a clean audit, but you still have the albatross hanging around you, is very bizarre. Something else, what is your problem? What are you experiencing in terms of difficulties when it comes to hiring investigators? Your investigative department is short-staffed. Is it a money issue? Is it an it's a money issue. Okay, so... So, again, what are you going to do to try and get around that? Because that's your core mandate. That's exactly what you need. You need those investigators, and you've got 25 vacancies or had it last look there. And, something I wanted to know, aside from the issues raised by Mr. McBride earlier, what is today the attitude of the SAPs towards the IPED? Since its inception, way back in history, the SAPs have sniggered at it. That's why we had to change the Act. They used to just look at all the recommendations and say, well, that's fun, and throw them in the bin. They would not act at all. Are they starting to realize that you are an entity that means business and has the ability to act? Or are they still tending to treat you? I'm a bit nervous when I hear that I think it was rapes in police custody, you weren't getting the information. And that to me talks of police still covering up for booties. That thin blue line, which is supposed to protect us, sometimes hides the SAPS criminality from those trying to investigate it. So, I think I'm covered there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Galabana. Honourable Bailey.
I'm sorry, Chairperson, just doing some wiring, re-engineering here. All right, here we go. We're getting there.
Okay.
And we're there. Okay. Right. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the ED and his team for the presentation. Three questions from my side, possibly three and a half. The first, I suppose, the first comment is obviously just to echo the concern about the fact that the Mabula Hit Squad continues to operate unlawfully and with impunity, and made even worse by the fact that it's assisted by elements of crime intelligence, who should be throwing their full weight behind cracking down on cash and transit heists, but no, we're going to be doing wild goose chases with partisan agendas. So good luck bringing down organized crime. But my first question is, as the colleagues have said, the big hanging cloud is obviously around the finances. So my question is whether the IPED team has thought about and identified opportunities for addressing the fiscal straitjacket that the department is in through the impending legislative reform process. I know that the committee bill has got a very specific and narrow and singular objective, but it is nonetheless an opportunity, given that the channel is open, to tweak and incorporate other issues that are hanging in the air. Obviously, one is aware that money bills can only be initiated by the Treasury, and the final say in terms of the estimates of national expenditure rests with the Treasury. But have you done any creative thinking around whether a legislative reform process could give some opportunities to alleviate, mitigate, and help to address, especially given that the immediate problem is very clearly defined? There's 19, 20 million odd rand per year that is just refusing to budge. It's like that last bit of umkaba that you just can't get rid of when you're on a diet, you know? How are we looking at whether this opportunity is given the committee bill process to come? My second question relates to slide 43, which are the negative recommendations to the NPA. I'm very concerned by the figures in the second and third row, which show a low ratio of prosecute to decline to prosecute decisions on the part of the NPA. It's effectively 1-6. So never mind the ones that you're awaiting a response from. Of the ones that actually do reach a decision, only 1 out of every 6 are actually prosecuted. So the simple question is, where is the problem? Is there an NPA reluctance to take cases to court that, to their mind, aren't absolutely watertight and winnable? And or is there a laziness on their part to try and kind of stem the flow of throughputs so that they can meet their time-bound targets and therefore look good when they report to the Justice Committee and in their annual reports? Because this issue of the interface between the investigative bodies and the prosecuting authority, that interface is showing some symptoms of big problems and sort of misalignments. And I'd like to know, in the IPED environments, what's your experience, what's your feedback when you follow up and you ask? Because, you know, somebody could say maybe there's an issue with the quality of the investigations and the dockets that you're handing over to the NPA. And that's why the NPA declines so many of them. If we could just get some clarity on that. And then my third question, Chair, is on slide 38, which is about the negative recommendations to the SAPs. What I see there is that more than 10% of the negative recommendations that actually get initiated by the SAPs results in no guilty findings. Why is that? Is there a problem with police culture closing ranks in certain cases, or is it a problem with the quality of investigations and cases that IPED hands over for SAPs to initiate? And then my half, possibly fourth question, check, which links to the same slide, is that I'm very concerned, and it's been an ongoing concern of mine, about the high percentage of recommendations handed over by the IPID in which SEPS does not initiate those disciplinary proceedings within 30 days, which is an obligation as per Section 30 of the IPID Acts. There's no ifs, buts, or mays. It just has to happen. And assuming that IPID would be handing over a case in which there's prima facie evidence of misconduct, then essentially SAPS is fostering impunity by not following through with their obligations. But what I did note just now when I glanced at the legislation is that there's actually no specific offence created for contravention of Section 30, only Section 29, which is not being cooperative in handing over information. So is there a case to be made with the committee bill process to also create a specific offence with minimum penalties or whatever the case might be for Section 30, so we can light a fire under the police's butts in playing their role in that value chain? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mslungu.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Mine is very short. On this question of Northwest, Chairperson, because IPD, this is a national institution. It's a national division on its own. And we all know General Patani comes from Northwest. And in fact, Jefferson, you recall in a meeting when he brought these generals from Northwest to a meeting with serious accusations against IPID, I asked a question. I still stand by that. When particularly the armed forces, within the armed forces, once you touch one of them, particularly their own head commander, they close ranks. And when I asked Badani, why in this case all the generals from the headquarters leave you alone, Chief? You decide to bring homeboys from Northwest. Not even one. Is it a club to gang against an institution of state in your own personal defense or furthering national interests? There was no response. Now, I think it's a high time, Chairperson, that maybe because this thing, I understand that when the current National Commissioner was asked this very question, he said, no, let us allow this, and I think the minister, the new minister, let us allow the due process of law. I think this process needs to be, we need to call, once we open, we come back, we need to call a meeting with the executive and the national commissioner and get to understand as to why this docket that they claim to be having cannot be taken and located in the headquarters of the South African police instead of being handled by the homeboys who might be conflicted because of proximity of the person of their own in the matter. Otherwise, we can end up having state resources being plundered for advancement of personal defense, which is just tantamount to defeating ends of justice deliberately. Northwest, according to my understanding, one business person within a particular organization was gunned down there. Up until today, no progress made. These people, we expect them to be doing that instead of just using state resources for witch hunting purposes, which has got no benefit or cost benefit to the taxpayer of this country. Instead, ripping off taxpayers' money whose pockets are already bleeding because of the current hikes, petrol, VAT, etc., etc. We cannot allow this. Let us explore whether this They cannot take the documents and locate it to the headquarters. I think the headquarters has got all specialized investigators who can actually see whether there is any matter. Instead of allowing this man to stand type of a style. So that we can bring this matter to rest. It can be. Then, on this question of finances, I don't know if there is a page there. I understand that the Treasury made some recommendations. I want to find out from you, Executive Director, whether then you have had a meeting with them. Because the head of legal services is saying that, look, we are operating on an odd kind of staffing. Yet we have got an influx of workload, which means even if you look at the targets there, the reason to me seems to be seems to be concurring with the given targets, which appear to be below the level, based on the reason that is given. Have you actually had a time of calling Treasury to actually to have a meeting on one-on-one with them and say, this is what we are expected to do. This is an allocation that we are having. Can you also advise? Instead of them just to say, no, we expect you to cut and cut and cut up until we have got nowhere to cut. Now, really, because to me it will be just useless that when an organization, I think when I heard the National Commissioner, when asked on national television about this matter, Chairperson, that you raised, about corruption in the South African police, yes, it is actually say, yes, we welcome the work of IPID, we, whilst we are flashing out criminals, but we are also committed as South African police to clean our own house as well. That undertaking by the National Commissioner, to me, was quite well profound and very good. Because we cannot actually sit here and just say, South African police is holy, holy, when we can see even these highs that these cash in transit highs, they comprise of inside job from the private security guard, assisted by some police as well. Now, even only if we don't actually then get that kind of a thing, Chairperson, I think we might be heading to a disaster because we will continue plundering millions of money where there are no good returns, and only to find that the goose that lays golden egg is always kept under financial constraints as for whatever purposes only God in heaven will know. Because I will not understand if people will come and cry and cry and cry only to find that there is no immediate response. Yes, I agree that we have all concurred that with regard to the 20 million rand in the budget proposal that was made in Parliament, that it must be given to IPID. And there has been an overwhelming concurrence amongst all of us there. But has IPID called upon Treasury to say, here is the challenge that we are having, advice, so that they cannot just also sit up there in the Treasury and play holy holy when in fact something, there is a gap that is understood to be existing there, but we decide just to close our eyes. See no evil, hear no evil. That will be very detrimental to the cause of what we need to achieve as a nation. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mslungu. We will go now to responses from the East. Just a moment, please, Honorable Bija.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. About the first issue that Honorable Mslungu raised about Pahlan, I should think that thing is above us as a committee, because now there are a lot of allegations in the public domain that has got to do what we believe and think, Patlane 1, 2, 3, 4, so and so 1, 2, 3, up to 20, just like that. So let's say to iron that thing, we need not discuss that here. The ministry must see how to finish with that one, together with us, not alone. Because we'll start saying things that are not real in an authorized meeting, whereas a lot of things are happening somewhere.
Yeah.
That's my input, subject to correction.
No, I think we take note of your input, but the dilemma is IPED is responsible for investigating matters, and they have to account for their investigations and the work they do. And part of that is investigating high-profile cases. So we need the information. I mean, if there's any matter that's in court or there's a material matter, of course, that can be ruled out of order. But in the normal course of things, the matters raised by Onuma Shlongu is part of the general discussion in the committee. It's in order. So, let's go to the responses. Executive Director.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Individual program managers will deal with the issues pertinent to them. I just want to deal with the issues. I've got them down as 9, 10, 11, and 14 questions like that. I think the first issue, Honorable Chairperson, is you identified correctly. Our job is to investigate certain misconduct and criminal acts by police on the basis of information received, complaints laid, or on the prerogative of the Executive Director. That we do. So we collate evidence, we compile the evidence, and we submit files and dockets. Dockets to the NPA, files to the police. We have evidence which we submit. And when we submit it to the NPA, NPA makes a decision, we have enough evidence, yes or no. We don't go on social media with our evidence. We put it before it's in dockets. We don't leak stuff to the media so they can deal with issues. The media is here. To get me into an interview is an impossible task. You can ask my national spokesperson, everything is referred to him. I don't think there's any of us, I'm not on any social media, I don't deal with it. I'm just saying we deal with evidence. We put it there. Now, there's no provision in law, Honorable Chairperson, that says the executive director or his senior management or his investigators have to explain themselves to suspects. In fact, I think if we come and explain ourselves to suspects, we will be very close to attempting to defeat the ends of justice. That I am not going to do.
Point of interruption, Chairperson.
Just a moment. Yes,
the head of IPED is now going into. It's not precisely the gist of my input. Thank you.
Yeah, I think I note, but let's get the response. You're welcome to continue. Thank you.
Honorable Chairperson, we do not want to settle criminal matters with our suspects. There is a case, it's before court, it must continue. If I'm attempting to settle, everyone's equal before the law, other suspects, police themselves, they don't go and sit and have a conference with a suspect and say, let's sort this out and hug each other. There's a due process, it must continue. I think it's unreasonable and it's probably unlawful to expect us to sit in conference and hug our suspects who we've investigated, who we have evidence on. It would be hypocritical that I've got evidence and I must attempt to find some reconciliation with a person who, on the basis of our evidence, has transgressed the law. They have sent people to us to do exactly this. And we've said no, and we've even said, how do we come to an agreement with you? You are our suspect. There is no meeting point. We have evidence against you. How can we come to a meeting point? So continue with what you're doing. We're not backing off. Now, Honorable Chairperson, the amount of pressure we've been put under by faceless people social media, elements in crime intelligence, elements in the NPA, we'll come to that just now. It would have made any other place, the executive director and my senior staff, walk away, take golden handshake and go. I'm sorry to say this on behalf of my people. My people have too much integrity to walk away. We're not walking away. We will continue with this investigations until the end. We are sitting in a situation in our country where it's generally accepted there's been state capture. Part of state capture is capturing the security services. And there's been collusion of interest. While others had one agenda, others had another agenda to loot. Looting has been going on for a long time. And we've uncovered it. It's not a detective service. It's not crime intelligence. It's not the intelligence service. It's IPED that uncovered it. So, the issue of us investigating, we've said it before, there will be pushback. We discuss, before we embark on an investigation, what is the pushback going to be? It's going to come. You're dealing with powerful people sitting behind what we call the blue curtain. Firstly, culturally not happy to be investigated. They are not happy to be investigated. But in a constitutional democracy, police must start becoming accustomed to having democratic oversight over them, investigative oversight in the form of IPED. We know there is collusion between the NPA, elements in the NPA, let me be fair, and members of SAPS. Now, I could go and give you specific which general approach, which investigator, which brigadier approach, which investigator, which investigator they took to Potchefstroom to agree to meet with a prosecutor. I can give you all of those details. I wish someone can ask me so I can give that. How does a letter, which is secretly written by a person who is removed from a task team because of integrity issues, which the Act allows for such things, is removed from the task team, he writes a letter to the minister, and I've engaged with minister. Minister says, I took the letter, put it in my safe. That letter gets onto social media. It gets on to a group chat of SABRIC, where SABRIC deals with countering cash in transit. It gets posted there by General Mabula. Now that I have the evidence, sitting in his pocket is an affidavit. It's there. That we know and that we saw. Why would one of my investigators write a letter to the minister? Let's say he's meriting his case. Why would it land up by General Mabula being posted on an anti-CIT group chat of SABRIC? That's the simple question is that. Why would Mabula and Mube meet with my investigators and decide how they must make statements against us? That is fact. We have a case, we've opened a criminal case, it's been going on. Me, executive director, I did not remove people from the task team. My people are allowed to be unleashed their potential in investigations. They do it, they deal with it. And where they see fit to remove people, they can remove people. So we're not going to, on that point. On the issue, Honorable Mthlongo, SAPO has already released a statement saying, why is the Fatlani disciplinary taking so long? They've released a statement, it's so long it's taken. Why? Tomorrow Fatlani is appearing in court. There might be others joining. At the moment there's four co-accused in the court.
Yes, just a moment, Executive Director, Honorable Mula, yes.
You know, from the first time when I was asking the questions, I said to you, all those things that are coming in the media, who says what, who did what, I said to you, to avoid the gossip and the media things and everything, let's call all the parties to come and account to us and the executive and the minister. Because now is his word against who and who, and we are not here for the Chairperson. That is why I said, let's have a day, a full day, to go and inside all these things. Because these things, Chairperson, yeah, where we are staying, they are asking us, and I'm a member of Protocol Committee of Police, we don't know.
Yeah. I see a lot of hands, but colleagues, let's allow the executive director to deal with all the questions. Let's give him an opportunity, and then we'll come back to the second round. Right, let's do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. As I was saying, SAPO has already raised the issue, not us. So why is there a delay in finalizing or even starting with Patlani's disciplinary? Let's have a hearing. You know, Mr. Sissoko, the head of the task team, Mr. Kuba, myself, we know how quickly and expeditiously disciplinaries can take place. We've been victims of that ourselves. So that process is, must go on. In terms of relationship with SAPS, Honorable Kolobwana raised it. We try to be as professional as possible. We were the first department to welcome the appointment of General Sithole. And we try to work with him. And I can understand his task is difficult, and he has given his commitment to work with us. There are issues which we might not be happy with, he might not be happy with. There are fundamental issues which we can't agree on, and we think they are unreasonably withholding information from us. But we turn to the courts when this happens. So it's not an issue of, you know, give space to the courts to make a decision. We want the courts to make a decision. We want them to have space. It's not us that facelessly leaks information, drops it on an anti-cash in transit chat group of SABRIC. The people responsible for fighting against cash in transits, coordinating strategic and operational responses, it gets dropped there by Jan Mabula. It's there. Now, I didn't raise this issue. It was raised and by people writing it. The minister is aware of this. Minister will confirm how the same Mabula has been attempting to smear the name of IPED, trying to reach him. The minister is experienced, intelligent. He's been a police officer himself. He knows the shenanigans that go on. So I would suggest have a discussion with the minister. The minister is aware of all aspects. I will hand over now to the programs dealing with CFO first, then our director's strategy, and then the programs from 1 to 4 to continue with responses. Thanks.
Right, let's get those responses. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will deal with a question that were raised by Member Liberty and Mayor Carter Barnett, because they are linked. I think most of them are actually the same. Let me start with the issue of unauthorized expenditure. In terms of the PFMA, Member Liberty, there are 4 instances where you can incur unauthorized expenditure. It's overspending on the vault, it's overspending on main divisions within the vault, it's the spending that is not in line with the vault, it's when you overspend on compensation of employees, and it's when you overspend on transfer payments. So, as IPED, we didn't do any of the 4 things. So there's no unauthorized expenditure for 2017-18 for IPED. I think also Mayor Kolobwana raised the same question. So I think the answer that I would give is to say there's no unauthorized expenditure for 2017-18. And then the second issue was the issue of accruals. I think to answer this question, Chairperson, I need to firstly analyze the causes of accruals for IPED. There are 2 issues. First of all is the issue of underfunding. When I was presenting, I emphasized that our underfunding is mainly on our contractual obligation. You look at the issue of the leases, you look at the issues of our cleaning and security. These 2 items in the context of IPED, they are non-negotiable. You can't live without those 2 items. And currently, as it stands, we are underfunded when it comes to those things. And second issue is the issue of the unplanned expenditure. I think, Chairperson, you raised the issue of the litigation, that when you do your budgeting, you can't anticipate the number of litigations that you are going to do in a financial year. And also in terms of the PFMA, you are not allowed to budget for claims against the department or the settlements that you are doing, because it's considered to be fruitless and wasteful in expenditure, so you can't budget for that. So those are the 2 main causes of accruals for IPED.
And then in terms of what we are doing to address...
Maybe just on the issue of the litigation, Executive Director, did you discuss this issue with the Minister of Police? I mean, because you've got now two departments in the same cluster litigating against each other. Can we just maybe have an indication?
Yes, Honorable Chairperson, in amongst... Together with other issues we've discussed it, my team has met with the Minister and explained the problem of the litigation. And we get two messages coming from National Commissioner's side. On one side he says he will abide by the court decision, and another one he makes an affidavit which indicates he's going to oppose it. And on one occasion, Mabula is opposing, but the National Commissioner abides. So who is actually controlling the organization? So that's what we have. So it's in June, it's in this month, it will be heard. Ultimately, the issue of county investigation is a constitutional one because it interferes with our mandate, our ability to complete our mandate, to execute our mandate. So it has been discussed, yeah. Minister is aware, and I think we've written a number of info notes to Minister,
okay,
yes. Sir.
No, thank you for that. You can continue, sir.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And the other issue, Chairperson, during my last presentation, I presented a slide that was demonstrating the shortfall in terms of the budget. So if you take the allocation for IPIT and you minus all the contractual obligation, you will realize that you actually left with 10.5 million, which means that is the money that is available for operations, for normal operations. So if you want to completely deal with the issue of accrual, it means I must go back to Mr. Soko and Mr. Soko say, Mr. Soko, this is the 10 million that we have for this financial year. So it means you must cut the other cases that you are going to investigate so that there's no accruals at all, which is something that we cannot do as a department. And secondly, we are on modified cash basis of accounting, Mayor Kolabana, which means that you are allowed to accrue your expenditure because we are doing what is called a multi-year budgeting, which means what you accrue this financial year, you can recover from the next financial year. And I think it also talks to the issue of the going concern. We had this debate with Treasury to say, in the context of government, can you really talk about the issue of the going concern? Because all the departments, they are allocated budget for multi-years, for a three-year period. So, if you are saying that the department is not a going concern, it means you are saying that that department must not exist. And when I was still with Treasury, that's the debate that we used to have with the AG to say, can you really say a department is not a going concern? But that's the debate for another day, Chairperson. The other issue that was raised was to say then, what are we doing in terms of dealing with the issue of accruals? When I started in my introduction, I mentioned five things that we are currently actively doing. First of all, we are trying to reprioritize expenditure from the non-core items to direct those funds to the core items so that you know, at least our investigations can proceed. And one of the ways that we are using is that we have a budget control committee that sits on a regular basis to look at expenditure to say, firstly, is our expenditure still in line with what we plan to do? And secondly, is there any wastage in the system? Can we cut some of the program and realign those funds to some of the programs? So that is one of the things that we are doing. And then the second thing that I've mentioned is that some of the satellite offices or some of the district offices has already been closed. And again, I emphasize that it's not an ideal situation because I think as IPIT we need to have presence also in the rural areas. And also the other thing that now we are in the process of doing is to cut some of the activities, you know, to start implementing the activity-based budgeting, where we will say how much will it cost IPIT realistically to be able to investigate the number of cases that we want to investigate so that, you know, a decision can be made to say do we rather reduce the cases or what do we do. And also I think ED has already emphasized that we've prioritized the high-impact cases. We had to do some sort of reprioritization of the cases so that, you know, we take into account the issue of the underfunding of the department. There was also an issue to say what is the final figure in terms of the accruals. Was it 17 or 19? When we sent the presentation, they were sitting at 17, but now the final figure that we are sitting with is currently 19. That's why I mentioned the issue of 19, whereas on the presentation it's 17 million.
Thank you, CFO. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Sogo.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. I'll deal with the questions you raised, Chairperson, in relation to the high-profile meters and the generals that are involved. Incidentally, we also received a parliamentary question with regard to the number of generals that were investigating. Of course, this issue started with General Patlani, so he's the first general that we started with. He's a lieutenant general. We made disciplinary recommendations against him. He's appearing in court also on the criminal matter. The case is coming on tomorrow. As I speak, there's an engagement with the prosecution authority today by my team in relation to other suspects that should be added to the charge, including Kit Keating and others. Now, the other general involved is General Shezi. Allegations also of corruption and money laundering. I'm informed yesterday that he was suspended. We had made recommendation for his suspension about a month ago. So I'm informed that that has happened, I think, yesterday. It's part of this greater investigation. There's General Nema Tenzela. He's in crime intelligence. Allegation of corruption against him. We had made recommendation also against him for disciplinary as well as his suspension. He was suspended, but SAPS failed to take disciplinary action against him as per their regulation. Within 60 days, if no disciplinary action is taken, then he comes back. Then he came back because they failed to take disciplinary action. We wrote again to the SAPS to indicate our unhappiness that 60 days elapsed without them taking any disciplinary action.
Chairperson, just a clarification.
Honorable Markey.
Are these generals charged already? Because if they are not charged, I'm not sure whether it would be a legal thing to mention their names. I'm not sure.
John, let's give him an opportunity to respond, please.
As I was indicating, Chairperson, that this was part of the parliamentary question that we received, because the question was, who are the generals that you are investigating? So we had to respond to that. So we're not saying they are guilty of any offense. We are saying we are investigating allegations against them of corruption and other offenses. So some have been charged criminally. Some we've made disciplinary recommendation against them, and some it is still part of the investigation.
Chairperson, I was only on those that are being investigated. Is it legally? Because even if a person has been arrested, it's usually said this person hasn't gone to court, so we can't mention the name. I was afraid maybe we might be doing something wrong. I'm not sure. Legally, how does it happen? Do you usually say we are investigating? I mean, it will be in the papers tomorrow. We are investigating this one and that one and that one. Legally, is it the right thing to do?
Well, I can't say, but I mean, in the public interest and in terms of accountability, transparency and democracy, we need to ask those questions to IPAS. We need to know if there's allegations in the public domain. I mean, the National Commissioner indicated this week earlier that two lieutenant generals have been suspended. So, you know, we just want to cross-question IPAS, who's responsible constitutionally, what is the issues. But I mean, they can answer, they're the experts.
Can I just clarify my question? I'm only talking about the names. Yeah. I mean, you can tell us or we are investigating five generals or so. I don't know. I'm not a legal person. Five lieutenant generals, they are going to be charged, and the names maybe would be... I'm just afraid maybe we are doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, but remember the question I've asked. I asked specifically... How many lieutenant generals, how many divisional commissioners, how many regional or provincial commissioners. I didn't ask the specific, but Mr. Sokhi, you're welcome to go ahead. Yes.
Chairperson, yeah. The question's already gone through as a parliamentary question. It's already been answered. It's already out there. It's in the media. There's no point in censoring what we hear, so we have to go and buy a newspaper to find out the names. That's just absurd.
The question is it legally right? That's my question. Not asking any other. Is it legally right to do that? That is my question.
Right, let's give IFA the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members. And Honourable Maki, I hear your concern, Honourable Maki. What we are saying is that we are investigating allegations. That happens every time in an investigative environment. The issue as to when a person is ultimately charged is a different matter altogether. You see, it will be legally impermissible if we indicate that we are investigating a particular person when in fact we are not investigating that person, or even he's not even implicated in the investigations that we are doing. So in my view, that would be legally impermissible. But what we are saying is that these are the allegations that we have. These are the people that are implicated in the allegations. For instance, the issue of General Pahlani was out there way even before he appeared in court, because it was allegations. So that's why every time we talk about this, we say allegations, because we're very sensitive to the fact that these people have not gone through a due process. Okay, these are just allegations that are made against them, and investigation must then prove, and the courts must then prove whether they are guilty or not of any offence that they're being charged with.
Thank you, Honourable Marky. You can continue, Mr. Soko. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Then we also have I've indicated General Nematinzela. General Makela appeared in court on allegations of defeating the ends of justice, and then we also made a departmental recommendation against her. They have not received any feedback with regard to departmental recommendations against her. The matter that went to court was withdrawn because there was another defeating ends of justice matter that we are investigating, and the prosecutors felt that they wanted to consolidate these two matters and proceed on those bases. So we're still waiting for the NPA in that regard. General Mabula and his team, we've made recommendations against him. We have not received feedback with regard to the disciplinary. The criminal matters are sitting with the NPA now as we speak. So that would be for murder, torture, and defeating the ends of justice. And then there are allegations also in relation to General Zara. That matter is still sitting with the NPA. We are currently investigating also allegations of fraud and corruption against General Mukwena. We are also looking at allegations of corruption against General Mwobo from the CIA environment. And then we are also looking at, this matter is the same as the one of General Makela against General Mtsonyane. That is also sitting with the NPA for decision in relation to defeating the ends of justice. So those are the high-profile generals that we are busy with in investigation. With regard to counter-investigation, we met with the...
Just a moment, Mr. Soko. Yes, Honourable Mula. Honourable Kalabana.
Thank you, Chairperson. General Lora.
No, Mr.
Sisoko. Mr. Sisoko, what about the case of Pahlani about the music system in the house? Is still in those cases or what?
Still
because
part
we heard it once and now he is in court about the motor cars. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kala Barnard. And then Honorable Bijan. Colleagues, we must move. Time is running out. Yes.
Query. I don't know if there was ever. I don't know if there was ever a case put with you about the woman who still calls herself a general, Pierre. And she now is outside your control, but was the case ever laid with you in that regard? It's the most interesting dynamic, because I don't know if a civilian now needs to lay a charge against her, because she's certainly still using her police connections to get a fat job, and in fact sits on Polmed. You might be interested, she still determines your medical aid in the police. So I'm just wondering if a charge was ever laid against her with you.
Thank you, Honourable Bija, Honourable Mula, Honourable Mula Batsi. Colleagues, we...
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak out.
You're welcome.
I would like to put it on record that I never ever meant to say IPID must stop executing its mandate of investigating whoever is due for investigation in SAPS. People do not get me and correct, and whether you will become emotional or we speak in tongues, I meant what I said in the beginning, initially. Thank you.
Thank you, Member. Honorable Mula, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Sisowo, I want to ask you about the Brigadier Petle. Did Brigadier Petle is a police official. Last time there was this thing of 50,000 that was put in her account. Did they give you that case to investigate, because she's a police official? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Molobachi.
Yeah, I was also on Brigadier Petle. About the issuing of that security clearance. According to me, it's fraud, isn't it? Are you also investigating it?
Right, thank you, members. Let's go. I think let's deal with all the responses. I mean, those additional ones, of course, but that we can, you know, ensure that we deal with everything before we break. Thanks.
Just 30 seconds on the last
Mike, please. Thank you.
Thanks. I met with General Sithole together with Mr. Sisowo and requested a docket, and he had said he would give it to us. We met him at Maupanaga. We didn't receive the docket. On that matter, we don't know where it is, so I didn't get the docket on Brigadier Petle.
Right, let's go to the other responses, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I was saying that on counter investigation, we met with the advisor to the minister at the instance of the minister, the legal advisor, with the legal head of SAPS on this issue. And then there was discussions around it to avoid unnecessary litigation between the two departments within the ministry. We left that meeting with an understanding that the head of legal in SAPS, General Khan, was going to engage with the national commissioner, because the principle that we raised at the meeting, all the parties were in agreement that it shouldn't be, because also it's in our act that we can't investigate matters where we've got personal interest in. So why should the police investigate matters where they have personal interest in? So, and at that meeting also, the fact that the national commissioner had also filed papers that he will abide by the decision of the court in that litigation, it therefore did not make sense that those that report to him will oppose the action, you know. So unfortunately, after that meeting, there's never been any feedback until last week, when we got a correspondence from our attorneys that despite the fact that the National Commissioner has filed papers to abide, has now filed papers to argue the matter. So that is where that issue is. But from our side, we've tried, even during General Mutiba's time and so forth, to try and have this matter amicably resolved between the parties, because in our view, it's not in our interest that we go to court in these matters. In any event, we don't have the resources to be going to court every time on these matters. With regard to the question on delays on technical reports, these are reports that are with the Department of Health, and we're really having difficulty, not only ourselves but also the police, in getting these reports on time. Your histology and toxicology reports, we're having a really difficult time. We've instructed our provinces to have regular meetings with the heads of Department of Health in different provinces to try and have sort of a special regime for us, because the death cases for us is part of the priority cases that we investigate. But this is something that is out of our hands. With regard to the targets that are low on torture matters, as we've indicated in our earlier presentation on APPs, that what we do is we link our targets to the resources that we have. And we also evaluate the cases that we do in terms of their complexity and so forth, and what is feasible to do based on the resources that we have. Because it won't make sense to put targets that we won't be achieving, and then we'll be coming again before the committee and say we are unable to achieve the targets. So that is why those targets are where they are. On the question of difficulty in getting investigators, Honourable Mbele, it still comes also to the issues of funding. You know, as long as we don't get the necessary funding, we can't get more people on board to assist with the investigation. So at the end of the day, we have to do with what we have and try to work smart around the resources that we have at hand.
Chairperson,
yes, Omar Malkin.
Yeah, I think he was answering my question, but he didn't. The reprioritization, I said, does that also apply to murder? That's the specific question I asked, because I thought murder must just be a priority at all times, especially if it's in police custody. So do you have to reprioritize? I saw it falls under that. So I was getting worried, or somebody would say that this person was killed 3 years ago in police custody. We haven't heard anything from the investigator or from IPED. So my question was along those lines. Sorry. How do you reprioritize murder? I thought it was just straightforward.
Thank you, Mr. Marke. Yes, you can continue.
The prioritization, Honorable Marke, we've prioritized all cases of death as a result of police action, death in custody, rape in police custody, rape by a police officer, as well as torture cases. Those are all cases that we've prioritized. Hence, we said that when you look at our performance, all the cases that we've prioritized, we have tried to reach our target. In fact, we have reached our target, except for death as a result of police action, because of the issues of these technical reports that have been outstanding for quite some time. So those are the priority cases. So it does not say all the other cases we don't investigate. However, we place priority on these five priority cases. On the question of attitude from the SAPs, I think the executive director has dealt with that. I may hasten to say that because our relationship is sometimes contradictory, you know, like recently we had to issue 205 to force information, you know, from senior management of the police, and then we recently got, yesterday, we got papers from lawyers that we must withdraw our 205 and our civil tickets to court. So that again will cause us now to spend to go to court and litigate with the police, you know, which is in our view completely unnecessary. in the face of the fact that the information we're requesting, even the Inspector General of Intelligence is saying there's no need why they can't provide us with that information. So these are some of the challenges on issues of attitude. On the question whether there's an opportunity for on the amendment process to look at issues of funding and other issues that we've raised, Honourable Member, I think in our amendment that we worked with the Civilian Secretariat, I'm sure it will be presented to the portfolio committee process. We had dealt with some of those issues, but as we understand, the committee wanted only to deal with those specific sections. So, but I'm sure when we had them put it, it's something that we'll put on the table. Why the number of low prosecution? I think, as you understand, we do the investigation, and the prosecuting authority have to decide based on the evidence we put before them, you know, whether they prosecute or not. And often it happens that we send matters to them for decision. We also agree that there isn't enough case to prosecute, you know, and they would definitely decline to prosecute on those matters. There are cases where we feel strongly that they should prosecute, and they would decline to prosecute. So it's a mixed bag. It's something that we don't have a control over. I can tell you as a former prosecutor that when you present a case to the prosecutors, an investigator presents a case, but the prosecutor will go through the case, and if there are issues in the investigation that he feels that were not adequately addressed in terms of the investigation, he will issue directives to say, address these issues to enable me to decide whether to prosecute or not. And then the investigator will do that, and then they will make a decision whether to prosecute or not. So the low or high, it can sometimes depend on the fact that there isn't, in fact, evidence to take the matter forward. Sometimes, in our view, there is evidence, but the prosecution would feel that it's not enough for them to take the matter to court. We have had a lot of fights with the prosecuting authority on some of the cases that we do. We even requested, in some cases, nolle prosequi certificate, because we feel aggrieved, and some of the matters we take in legal advice, whether we take them for a legal review on how they decided those matters and so forth. So those are some of the issues that we're dealing with. On the SAPS, as you rightly point out, the Section 30 is very clear that they must initiate within 30 days. And then, unfortunately, when they initiate and proceed with their disciplinary process, we are not part of the that process. Ideally, we would have wanted to be in those tribunals and you know, do sort of a watching brief to see whether it is being done properly. But we don't have the capacity to do that. So there are cases where you find that the members are found not guilty in circumstances that we don't understand why. When people are going through a court process, some of them have already been found guilty even in a court, but you find a different outcome with the SAPS. We've held a meeting recently with them. We've raised this issue to say we need to look at this issue, and also because there are times when they decide that they're not going to proceed with disciplinary proceedings, that even though we've made recommendation, and we made it clear that Section 30 is very clear. So if they've got issue with our recommendations, they must come back to us and say, these are the issues we have with the recommendation, so that we can relook at those issues that they're raising. And if we think they are valid issues, then we will amend our recommendation accordingly. If it was a negative, we'll make it a positive. Or if we feel that our evidence is strong enough, we insist that they proceed. So this is the engagement we had with them recently to say it cannot be allowed. So they are working on this issue, or at least that's the promise they made in the last meeting we had with them, that they will deal with with those issues. I think I've addressed all the issues. Thank you.
I just want to get indication, is it all the responses? We will still need the issue of lifestyle audits, lifestyle audit. Yeah, let's get all the questions, then we finalize. Yes, Honourable Bailey, and then Honourable is Mabija. Thank you.
The only unanswered part of my question from Mr. Sisoko is whether a contravention of Section 30 should be an explicit offence.
Thank you, Honourable Mabija.
My question is, do you, according to your mandate, do you investigate down to the local stations, police stations, as members of SAPS? It's because according to my understanding, it's like you are concentrating on the bosses of SAPS. I never heard you saying from Limpopo police station, this 1, 2, 3, we're investigating so and so, so and so. I just want to be clear, to have a clear understanding of how far goes does your mandate carry you to.
Yes. Right. Thank you. Honourable Mshlongu. Thank you.
No, Jefferson, I wanted to know, I think the legal service finance will be able to respond to that question that I raised, whether they have managed to actually have a meeting on one-on-one as a department with the Treasury in order to be able to open their books and also in line with their mandate, so that they can actually then be advised right on the spot as an IP, rather than just Treasury just generating reports and all that thing. To me, it doesn't make any sense, I must be honest.
Right. Any other member? Everybody happy? Thank you. Thank you, members. Let's go to the final responses. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. With regard to Section 30, I think Honourable Member is right. There is an opportunity there to look at penalty clause in terms of non-compliance, Section 30, as there is with Section 29. The investigation at the station happens more often, in fact on a daily basis. As we've indicated, in the 17-18 we had 9,451 cases registered with us against members, which include current and backlog cases. So most of the cases happened at the station level, so at provincial level, station level. The reason why we spoke about these ones is because there was a specific question in relation to the generals that we are investigating. But we're investigating from a constable up to a general. Without any discrimination.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. With regard to the lifestyle audit, currently in the public service, the different stakeholders are still developing the guidelines and the policies, the stakeholders including National Treasury, Presidency and DPSA. Once they've finalized the guidelines and the policies, the policy that will regulate the lifestyle audits of senior public servants, then we will start with the process. But currently, as the department, all senior managers, we do our normal financial disclosures. The gap there is that when a person discloses that they've got a holiday home in Durban or Cape Town and another home there, there is no follow-up to check if that person, can this particular person, within what afford, they are getting, afford that. It requires a specialized skill of forensic investigation, because you have to check even the background, the family and so on, whether the person inherited those and so on. So the guidelines will assist in doing that. Also, the gap currently is that when a person disclose their financial interest, there is no way to investigate whether they fully disclosed. Some they would disclose partially and so on. So the guidelines that we will be getting, so that we do not go against the law and privacy issues and so on, we are still waiting as various departments.
No, I hear your response, but the counter argument will be, you're an independent institution. There was a recent court case as well giving you that teeth. Now, you should actually lead by example and say, well, we want to lead by example. We're instituting now on our own accord this lifestyle audit to also to indicate to SAPS we're serious. I just want to hear your response to that. Honorable Mullah, you wanted to come in. Let me just hear your response.
Yeah, not on the chairperson. I want to ask, who's investigating the IPID members? Like, if an IPID member is having a problem, who's investigating them? You guys. Thank you.
Right, Honorable Molobatsi, you'll be really the last, because we already closed actually the rounds.
Yeah. Mine actually was just a follow-up on the response about the lifestyle audit. Who does this with IPID, the audit, the lifestyle audit?
Right, let's hear from the executive director's team.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. The issue of investigating IPID, where IPID commits offences or misconduct, is there are internal investigations. If it's the executive director, it will be the minister who starts a process, as we are going to amend the Act as per the Constitutional Court decision. Where it's a criminal case, the SAPS investigates us. What we are opposing is when we are investigating SAPS, like Patlane and Mabula and those people, they do not then counter-investigate us because there's a conflict of interest. That's our only difference. We've been investigated by SAPS. We've been even arrested. And it's important to say, for the record, they could provide no evidence when we've gone to court on these matters. Thanks.
Let's hear about the IPID lifestyle audit pro forma that's going to be developed.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Malibati, the office that's responsible for lifestyle audit is our corporate governance under the risk office. They are responsible for that particular function. However, it needs specialized skills, it needs capacity, it needs so much. We still need to develop that particular capacity. So we would really, through the office of the CFO, we take your comment that we are an independent institution that should lead by example, and we will definitely present our case in terms of the needs and what is the plan going forward.
Yeah, because the National Commissioner committed himself, I think they will do it. So I think IPID should rise to the occasion, yes.
Yeah. Meaning for now, it's not up to standard. Is that what I'm hearing?
It's not currently in place, I mean, yeah.
Not in place.
Yeah.
It's IPID is a work in progress, and that's why we can have the full review of the Act and see what's missing. Constitutional Court has made its pronouncement that we should be operationally and structurally independent, and that would require the necessary resources, including issues of forensics, ballistics, and other related matters. We do not have the capacity, only because we don't have money.
Right, any other, yes, sir. Oh, yes, sir.
I think there's a last response in terms of whether we engage with Treasury on the funding. I think since I started in February, the first thing I did was to write formally to Treasury to make them aware of the financial situation, and we made progress already in terms of the funding for IPID. But what we agreed was to say we are going to facilitate another meeting between ourselves, SAPS, and them, so that then we can iron out the issue of funding. Because one of the arguments that I was making to Treasury was to say, if you look at SAPS, there are contingent liabilities in excess of 5 billion. And if you look at what they have been sued for, it's within the mandate of IPID. So in essence, IPID can save SAPS money. So the only thing they need to do is to do a conditional grant to IPID to say, this is the target that you need to achieve as IPID.
in a way saving ourselves money. So that was the argument that I was making with Treasury. So I think they agreed to say, let's have a meeting with between ourselves, them, and SAP so that we can discuss this issue further.
Yes, Mr. Soko.
I've got to answer the Pierre question.
Thank you.
Honorable Bernard, the investigation on Pierre, it's in relation to Marikana. So that matter is sitting with the NPA. As you may be aware that there are other members of the police like General Mbembe who are appearing in court. But in relation to the other matters, the NPA has not taken a decision on that, including in relation to General Pierre. The other matter that we investigated against General Pierre was the one linked to the Lamour matter, where there was allegation that she leaked information. That matter was thoroughly investigated. The NPA declined to prosecute on the matter, because the view was that the evidence was not enough criminally, but only departmentally. We did also on that matter make recommendation for her to be disciplined in relation to that matter at the time of Minister Ntlego. So nothing came of those recommendations.
Right, members, we're going to close now. No, I'm sorry, we're going to close. Thank you, members. We close the book. Thank you very much. We want to thank the members for their participation. Maybe just in terms of the program for next week, there was input regarding the full day program. So I just want to indicate Tuesday, we're going to start with the reports, the minutes. But in the afternoon, we're going to have the engagement with the DNA board. So members must be available for the whole day. Wednesday's program is the issue of cash in transit. Now, there's a lot of role players coming, so members must also prepare for the whole day. Thursday is the issue of contract management and SAPs, and that's also going to take some considerable time, so I just want to indicate that to members. I think we take note of the input of IPET. We, of course, will monitor it, but what is quite important, the last issue we have raised, the issue of the lifestyle audits. I think maybe executive director, when you go back, really to consider that, come with your own approach and, you know, set the example, because it's important also in terms of assurance and also that your members are, you know, as an oversight institution are above board. Thank you, members. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you. Thank you, pilot. You will see to the publishing there.
Yeah.
You've got an excellent official who can see the life. The whole morning and then afternoon could not be really important.
I'm going to go to the next one.